Tonight's Hall of Fame concert celebrates that most wonderful of things, the classical music superhit. So what is a classical music superhit? It can be most anything, a movement from a piano concerto, a tone poem, or maybe a favourite aria. They span the centuries, having sprung from the pens of the great composers and the one-hit wonders alike. These are pieces that have that indefinable something, a quality that elevates one symphony above another, a chorus that makes us rejoice when others fail to move us at all. But if these are the classical hits of today, then what about tomorrow? I put this question to our Lyric FM presenters and asked them what classical music would we still be listening to in 100 years' time. George Hamilton pointed out the importance of melody.
I think the key to what makes a piece last, what guarantees enduring appeal, is quite simple. It's the quality of the tune. There's a lot of truth in that old number. The song is ended, but the melody lingers on. You've only to think of the TV themes, the movie scores, even jingles from the ads, to realise how important the hook in the tune actually is. Julian Lloyd Webber talked about it when he was saying how people like classical music without really realising it. Enduring appeal is why, assuming you're of a certain age, you can't hear the air on the G string without thinking of a cigar. Enduring appeal is why Mahler's Fifth made it into the score of Death in Venice. Enduring appeal is why the producers of the BBC TV series The Oneidan Line married images of sailing ships in the title sequence to the slow movement from a suite of music by Kachaturian that would forevermore be known as Spartacus. The show's long gone, but it lives in the memory because the melody lingers on. There are lots of examples of classical pieces that have been worked into popular culture. Kismet, the 1950s musical, was a reworking of tunes written by Alexander Borodin. There'd have been no Stranger in Paradise without Borodin's opera Prince Igor, no Baubles, Bangles and Beads, nor indeed Mario Lanza's Showstopper and This Is My Beloved without Borodin's String Quartet No. 2. One Day I'll Fly Away is a jazz standard from Randy Crawford. Source material? Tchaikovsky's Waltz of the Flowers. What all these pieces have in common, the reason they've been borrowed down the years, it's simple. They're all great tunes. The best example for me, the one that sums up what makes a piece last, is the hook that began life in Mozart's Piano Sonata No. 14. Not one that we maybe remember too much, but we certainly remember the one it inspired, Beethoven's Pathétique. The principal melody and the slow movement of the Beethoven Sonata is actually Mozart's. And it too has found its way into popular song as This Night by Billy Joel. If it's good enough, they'll still be playing it in 100 years. The melody will linger on.
Yes, melody. A hummable tune. Certainly a factor in the popularisation of some music. But there are other factors too. Fashions and trends, by their nature, are always on the move. And that must surely apply to the arts and music too. Niall Carroll reminds us just how fickle the classical music scene can be.
You know, I'm never very good at estimating people's tastes in the present, never mind the future. I have always found it very difficult to know what sort of things end up being successful and other things that maybe should be, just never get a look in. So I'm not the greatest oracle of music in the world. However, when you look back and you see the music of Vivaldi or Bach and other Baroque masters have been around for hundreds of years, it's very clear that what we consider to be the classics today probably will still be around in 100 years' time. And then there's music of the present, what's loosely termed classical music, which is maybe as expendable as pop music for whatever reason, and that it won't be around even in a few years' time. Take the case of Cécile Chaminade, the French composer, the first French female professional composer and one of the few professional female composers in the world at her time, which is around the turn of the 19th into the 20th century. Now, she was a big, big star, in Paris, where she composed her music and went on a tour to the United States around 1907 and 1908 and was mobbed in the same way as Lady Gaga or Madonna or somebody like that would be mobbed today. However, today, apart from one or two flute pieces by Chaminade, her music has very much fallen out of favour. And what might have been certain to be around of Chaminade's 100 years ago, or just a little more, has largely disappeared from the repertoire. So it is hard to know. Take the case of the New Year's Day concerts in Vienna, a massive television event now with over a billion people viewing it every year. That only started in 1945, after the World War II, when it was decided the people of that city needed something a little more nostalgic and happy after the devastation of the Second World War. Now, people think that may have been around for 100 years before that, but just wasn't the case. This was a construct. So these things can happen where stuff is brought out of obscurity and made into an event which will roll on for 100 years. But in my view, it's just never easy to pin down what the taste of the public in the present, never mind the future, will be. But I will bet my bottom dollar that Mozart will be around, Beethoven will be around, and composers of those calibres simply are evergreen and will always be with us. When it comes to 20th century music, it's harder to tell. And for me, the jury is still out.
Tim Thurston agrees with Niall. Our future tastes will surely be dictated by future trends.
I've been involved in the so-called early music revival for over half a century, and have realised that our approach to music is very much influenced by fashion. I have no doubt that listeners in the future will hear how we interpreted all music at the beginning of this millennium and will consider it as old-fashioned and quaint as we view Klemperer's Bach today. Let's hope that in the future music lovers will be more open to new musical experiences, and that the unlimited accessibility to all music will lead everyone to a wider interest and to a less exclusive attitude.
It seems reasonable to assume that influential composers such as Bach, Beethoven and Mozart will still be popular in 100 years' time. But what of the modern composers who are still writing today? Which current composers are writing music that will stand the test of time? Liz Nolan makes her prediction.
My personal take on the music we'll be listening to in 100 years' time, well, I suppose it would be music which, for me, doesn't try to be clever, or which rather wears its knowledge lightly. I always think of a wonderful quote in a letter from Mozart to his father. Mozart was in the middle of writing three piano concerti, and in describing the works, he says to Leopold, "There are passages from which the connoisseur alone could derive satisfaction. But," he says, "these passages are written in such a way that the less learned couldn't fail to be pleased, even if they don't know why." And that, I think, is the essence of genius. Great simplicity and great depth, all in the same phrase. A composer of current times, which I think strikes that balance, is the American John Adams. Now, he's only written a few operas, but I was particularly struck by Nixon in China, John Adams' retelling of the big Sino-American event of the 1960s. It's a very serious topic, and John Adams' music is brilliant and complex at every level, incorporating elements of the past, of the present, indeed music of the future. But at the same time, every part of it just catches the ear. It makes for such compulsive listening. Your pulse is racing. You're brought along by this wonderful wave of sound. I just love Adams' music. I love what it represents. I love what he does and what he aims for. And of course, I do love opera as well. So, yep, my money's on John Adams, Nixon and China.
Another significant musical development in the past 100 years has been the arrival of films and film scores. Although music has accompanied films since the late 19th century, film scores have been a little more recent. Soundtracks have introduced movie-going audiences to orchestral scores in an unprecedented manner, forever and indelibly linking pictures and music. I asked Aideen Gormley which current film score composers she thought we would be listening to in 100 years' time.
Well, it's always interesting to note listeners' music requests, and even taking a brief look back to a Lyric Top 100 listeners poll from just a few years ago, I mean, the top 10 included J.S. Bach's Double Violin Concerto, Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker, Nessun Dorma sung by Pavarotti, Vivaldi's The Four Seasons in there too, and at number one, Rachmaninoff's Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini. Now, film soundtracks were popular within that top 100 too. The Lord of the Rings, E.T., Schindler's List, The Piano, Singin' in the Rain and Les Mis all featured, and I think soundtracks both old and new will still be listened to and enjoyed 100 years from now. Will we still be listening to someone as popular today, though, as, say, John Williams or Ennio Morricone? Yes, I think we will. But the main film score composer who will have taken over in terms of popularity, I think, will be Michael Giacchino. He's gained fame already with such hits as Up and The Incredibles, but he's also written the scores for such blockbusters as Star Trek Into Darkness and the last couple of Mission Impossible movies. Michael Giacchino, for me, is the one to watch.
Paul Herreus also has some thoughts on the medium of film and musical theatre and what their place might be in the future.
So most certainly things like film scores will have become retrospective, or a much more retrospective genre by then, and we'll be able to put them very much more in perspective, and of course they'll have been added to in whatever the corresponding medium is for that time. Which is terrifying to think of, really. But things certainly like musical theatre, for example, I think are going to become very much like Viennese operetta is today.
If we're to make any sort of predictions about what we might be listening to in the future, we should also think about how we might be listening to music in the future. Carl Corcoran has this to say.
Music is such a timeless entity. I mean, today we listen to the 12th century music of Hildegard von Bingen with equal comfort as we do to the 20th century Philip Glass or 21st century Nico Muhly. So I'm hoping that it'll be the same in 100 years' time, but there'll just be new names added to that vast canon.
Tim Thurston agrees with Carl and wonders whether future technologies will open us up to an even wider range of listening possibilities.
Well, the first reality, which, to be truthful, we can't even begin to imagine, concerns technology. All music, whatever strange and unimaginable that may be, will surely be accessible to everyone at any time, anywhere, to the highest level of sound quality. With the rate of technological change, 100 years is perhaps the equivalent of a millennium from Plainchant to Spotify. I've always been happy with the definition of the classics as being that which will last. And if the great composers of the past have lasted centuries, there's no reason why their popularity shouldn't last another one. As someone who loves the music of many centuries ago, I'd like to think that time actually won't make as much difference as it does now, and that our obsession with the 19th century will fade, and that we'll know the music of Pretorius as well as Puccini, Masho as well as Mahler, and the sound of the lute as well as the 22nd century synthesizer. And what of live music? In a way, I think there is great hope. The experience of making the effort to come down to the concert hall and sharing the live experience with others will be such a contrast to our other listening habits, and the joy of uninterrupted, concentrated listening so absorbingly different from the rest of our lives that it will perhaps become even more special than it is today. I daren't think what the top 10 will be in 2113, but I be confident that Bach will still bring the greatest joy.
Yes, it does seem like a reasonably safe bet that Bach will be a firm favourite in 2113. But it's worth remembering that Bach's music was largely forgotten in the years after his death, until later composers such as Felix Mendelssohn set about recalling Bach to a new generation of music lovers, and to many generations since. Ellen Cranitch points out the importance of the music and the legacy of J.S. Bach.
The great cellist Pablo Casals began each day by playing a little J.S. Bach on the piano.
It was an important part of the daily ritual, a kind of benediction on the day, cleaning the day for whatever was to come, a prayer without worship. The music of Bach is, for many people, the yardstick by which so much is measured, much like Leonardo da Vinci and Shakespeare. His music is profound, wise, humorous, scientific in its exactitude, and heart-stoppingly beautiful. There's no doubt that this will still be the case in 100 or 200 or 1,000 years' time, if the planet survives that long. The chamber works, cantatas, concertos, motets, and the towering St. Matthew and St. John Passions are like scaffolding holding up all of Western classical music. It is simply civilization in audible form. In the words of scientist Lewis Thomas around the time of the Voyager space program in the 1970s, when he was asked what music he would send into space, he replied, "The complete works of J.S. Bach." But that would be boasting.
We'll finish with some thoughts from Paul Heriot, predictions even, as to the composers and the music of today that he feels will stand the test of time.
Well, if I was to think of contemporary composers, I'd think of someone like the American composer, Michael Torkey. Rapture, his Malats, which is an extraordinary work, or his Adjustable Wrench, for example, which is very particular, I think, to the late 20th century. There's also his Javelin, and that was written for the Atlanta Olympics in 1996. Beautiful work by Steve Reich, which is so evocative. His duet for two violins and strings, written for Andreas Wassen. Edna Mitchell, a tribute to the late Yehudi Menuhin at that time. What a wonderful tribute. And yet, although it is a tribute to a violinist from the past, it's very much in the moment and the zeitgeist. And finally, just one of the contemporary works that really sticks in my mind is the Finnish composer Anu-Juhani Rautavaara's Cantus Arcticus, which is his concerto for birds and orchestra. And what makes it quite extraordinary is that it always has to be recorded using his bird song, which was recorded within the Liminka marshes, well within the Arctic Circle. And it really does bring a tingle to your spine. It's some a difficult tingle, nevertheless, something slightly menacing about it. But it's an extraordinary work, and one that we have never seen the likes of before, and I'm sure we never will again. So I think that would be enduring. Certainly something to listen to 100 years from now.
And so to the future. And what will we be listening to? Will the Lyric FM top 100 tracks of 2113 consist of Bach, Michael Torkey, Hildegard von Bingen and John Adams? We've got 100 years to figure it out and several hundred years worth of music to listen to in the meantime.